ATM is safe, your banks are safe, there's enough cash in the financial system, and there is an infinite amount of cash at the Federal Reserve, an infinite amount of cash at the Federal Reserve,
an infinite amount of cash at the Federal Reserve.
Then I would sell my Bitcoin right into this rally. And believe me, I have been a believer one time in Bitcoin. Not here, not now. Find somebody to love, don't you?
Arbitrage on this trend has been margin called.
Think you was a hook. Trusted your idols, now they got you shook. Believe in the crooks. Hell of the same. Are they cooking the books? Save up a decade, all us in a day. Another November, I'm just getting away. Bigger the bag. Bigger ripple effect. When it all blows off, it is you who will pay.
Behind the ass, it's not a success. Put back the curtains and what do you get? And it's the risk with a big tippy net. Made from your savings. And 401k. Give it to the other side of the trade. Socialize less is why we've been the game. First to fall in this reckless war. Cause it's just a pawn in the control of this game.
Money talks and pay for the show. Pay for the clout. Pay for the thrill. Pay for the media to lie to our face. Taught the truth so we repeat our mistakes. Sell us the dream that never delivers. While we're here. Fees, including the ticket, siphoning funds from the mountainous biggest, blindly the blind to the all complicit. Money is cheap and addicted to growth, commingled with risks so nobody knows. The higher it will go to a damaged collateral, another excuse for oppressive control. The government kept you as private play. Reapers of value at the end of the day. We're calling for help, but nobody came. And bailouts are poor and complete.
Money deeply rots at the core. Don't believe intentions are pure. This crypto contagion stems from a system that incentivized fraud. As schemes get more complex, and fallible humans left unchecked. Playing the dark is how you get wrecked, and our economies are largely dead.
What would happen if we take the money out of its systems? Why protest our labor when we can pull out our capital? Where would we be if our money enriched us? Simply by holding purchasing power. How do we build a base? Replace the controlling effects with the world of free markets.
Give an independent system to remove the risk of corruption.
Step two.
Move the savings into that system so no one can ever touch it.
Step three.
Our savings, venture, all activities moving this way. We were home money, everything changed. We no longer positive to your family.
I'm tired of just not earning my worth. I'm tired of earning the logic. Piece of pie, or if you want to be a pie. Money is the art of heroes on the way. That's your chip score of politicians. Come and capture it, climb the place, and we reap the value at the end of the day.
So we can move value without being censored. Move up from gambling, saving. Move up from all the politics. Move on to the end of the internet.
So we don't have to trust every word that they say. So a freedom of one can be taken away.
So we treat and punish all the same.
So we can get to the chill of this game.
Knowing the truth will break the frame. Now our perspectives forever change. Truth is the key for us to reclaim.
Open the door, it's the king.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Bitcoin Veteran Spaces. I am your host, Coleman, and this is episode 93. We're almost at 100. Man, time is flying by, and I just want to thank all of you for tuning in every Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. to hang out with me and to listen and share your thoughts and your opinions and just kind of just hear me rambling on. So I really do appreciate that. I definitely want to cover some of the big topics today that are going on. Try and get the panel's thoughts on Trump's kind of weird acquisitions he wants to make with the Panama Canal, Canada, Greenland. So try and get everybody's thoughts on this and why he's really pushing so hard on this. And then talk about some reports that came out of Fidelity. But before we start jumping into that, I really just want to say thank you to a couple of listeners who are tuning in every day. We have Ace, Jeremy, Finish, Free Range, Hoddle, Blake. I have Sean King, Jay. I have Death in Bitcoin, Jordan, L, and Penny. And of course, up here on the panel, we have Eomar, Bit Pedro, and Bob Van Kirk. Good morning, gentlemen. How was your evenings?
Buenos dias. Really good.
Did I forget you, Ace? I'm sorry for not shutting you out. Go ahead, Dip Petro. I didn't mean to cut you off. Sorry.
I was just saying good morning.
Did anybody tune into the Bitcoin Veteran video podcast we had last night with Shane, Mike, Jordan, and we had Gary on there? Go ahead, Eomar.
I always double mute myself. I was just saying I tuned into it. I caught some of it last night. I finished it up this morning. It's a great episode and great timing on the topic of Nostra. I think it's something that we should all be aware of and starting to look at. I think we should be able to see like that. There's the saying that power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And I think we're kind of seeing that. When Musk came in here, I think he was kind of sincere. At least my impression was that he was sincere in trying to protect free speech. But now that he has a way to take advantage of not doing that, he seems to be going that route. Sorry, one second.
No, you're good. And I think that's really important. Like, that's why we Bitcoin, right? There's nobody in charge. No one can dictate how things are going to go. Like, Elon Musk might have had the best intentions when he took over X. I've heard a couple podcasts where he spoke the reason for him wanting to purchase it. There was something going on with his son, and how he, social media really influenced him to be trying transgender or transition to the opposite sex. So that was one of his big catalysts for purchasing X. But again, power can corrupt. And again, you're always going to try and change people to your views and try and benefit yourself. And it's regardless if you think that's going to be beneficial for society as a whole, or if you're just being selfish and trying just to, further your individual needs and goals. Go ahead.
I just want to point out too, I think there was a big shift. There was that time where he retweeted something that, the ADLs and all of them out there kind of labeled anti-Semitic. And then he went on that big apology tour and then from that point on, I think that, his intentions changed. We all have heard the theories on Epstein Island and how, is a tied to Mossad and a way for them to blackmail, various people of influence and this and that. And, first off, that's obviously not going to be the only thing that they have going on. There's plenty of levers they can pull to threaten people and to, try to gain control of people. And I kind of think that could also be it. So not necessarily that he is doing this for nefarious or personal gain reasons, but it could be that, something that he holds near and dear is being threatened. That's always a possibility. And it just kind of goes into the reason why we need something that's decentralized, because if you have this single point of failure, it's easy to, that's the $5 wrench attack, at a larger scale, really, just force. You can use force. You can threaten force on an individual. And, if any of us saw credible threats to our kids, we'd probably do whatever we could to protect them too. That's theory, but just if you look at the tone of things and the way things have shifted since then, kind of seems plausible at the very least. And that's where the strength of something like Nostra comes in, because it's decentralized. They can't put pressure on a single individual to, edit things or to delete things or to change the algorithms. I know they mentioned on the space last night that you can kind of customize your feeds and stuff like that. So there's a lot of cool things and just the fact that it's decentralized and you can have those, anybody can set up a relay, to kind of preserve that status, I think is the only way it can go. And I typed up a thing, when they were talking about it, but the idea that we can rely on these heroes of individual rights, it's always going to fail because they are corruptible, right? The individual has to be responsible for their own rights, collectively, yes, we can band together, but it has to be that, from the basis of individuals. We can't look to some savior. We have to, whether it's, Bitcoin for monetary things, not sure for free speech, or, we look at the Second Amendment and the right to own and, bear arms, as that like ultimate, safety and fallback. All that stuff has to start at the individual level, right? Like you wouldn't put your guns in like a, you know, a billionaire's armory, and request access for it, in case there's tyranny, right? Like it's just not like a break glass for tyranny at the billionaire's armory, right? Like it's in your house and you're training with it yourself. Everything else should kind of have the same mentality. You know, especially like free speech is like critical because without free speech, you can't organize against all these other things that are threatening our freedoms. So that's where I think, you know, Nashr is like really something that, and then myself as well, like I really have to do more to be active on there and to push it more. I like the lazy convenience of Twitter and the fact that I have a larger following here than I do on Nashr, but, you know, this is not my first Twitter account. You know, so, rather not wait to, for my third Twitter account to, you know, switch over.
And I'm glad you said that, Yomer, because it is really convenient to be on X because it's, you know, it's plugged into almost everything. But I have to say, I just downloaded Primal, during the show yesterday and I have to admit it was very user friendly. I was using Amethyst before. And that was, it was very glitchy. The relays would always seem like they'd freeze up and I couldn't see who was who. But I was really impressed with, Primal. It was really, really easy. The only thing I had a hiccup on was trying to connect my, my Lightning wallet. But I had a couple of the BVs help me walk me through it. And within about 5 to 10 minutes, I had everything working. So, again, there's a point where convenience kind of has to be put to the side and you just have to do what's right. But I will have to say, I do have to say this. I know we can bag on Elon quite a bit, but I do think that without him taking over X, I don't think you have Trump sitting in the White House, in a couple of weeks. I do think that him allowing some of the speech and the rhetoric going on X and the truth being brought to light was very instrumental, very important for Trump getting into office. And you can kind of see the ripple effects going across the globe right now, especially in EU, UK. And so, again, I'll give him props and pat him on the back for that. But again, I do think that, again, if you have a set authority and control of it, it doesn't matter what his intentions are. He's going to be swayed to one side or the other.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a good point. Like we are, I agree, much better off whether you like Trump or not. Like I think that Musk buying Twitter was a huge, boon for free speech and like the other concessions we've had since then from like Meta, and just the discourse in general, I think wouldn't have been possible without him buying it. It's just that he is, like you said, he's not infallible event, you know, for whatever the cause, whatever the reason, you know, he's going to differ from you. He can't. And won't be like a free speech absolutist. There's too many levers that he can pull and manipulate intentionally or not. That can spoil that. And that's, you know, we got a big boost from it and to really seize it, we have to, you know, take individual responsibility and, you know, suffer a little bit from things that are less, streamlined like, Nashr. But to your point, Primal is pretty awesome. I am not. Once it gets out of like the, core Bitcoin stuff, which I feel like I understand pretty well, and we get into like these other, like decentralized things, I get kind of lost, but Primal is, pretty easy for me to set up. You can look at the back channels there to see how much I'm struggling with Lightning. But Primal itself is like really streamlined. It's comparable to setting up an account somewhere else. And you know, if you are new to it, I would definitely suggest, you know, starting there and then you can look at other things.
I want to actually give a little bit of a shout out to Primal for helping me find the easiest way to give sats to my daughter for doing her reading assignments. Because I was able to just grab her old little, you know, Android device, throw Primal on there and their wallet is actually very user friendly and the discoverability of it makes it to where it's easy for me to either send it to her like a message or even cooler is like I can send it to her like a zap.
No, that's pretty cool. How long have you been doing that, Bitpetro? If you don't mind me asking.
So I can't remember who it was that I heard it from about a year ago, that 6 months ago was when I laid down her first challenge and she got $50, which is now like $90. So, you know, she's getting it.
Can I ask if this was her first social media account or did she have social media accounts before this?
So it's her first by herself, and that's because I feel like there is enough of an echo chamber inside of Nostra right now that she's not really going to go out and find anybody else except me. And it also serves like a pretty decent point-to-point messaging app. So like she sends me little messages and, you know, smiley faces and, emojis and stuff, but you know, she's not really using it like social media per se.
Okay. I was just kind of curious with that aspect. And from my experience with, Amethyst and just Nostra in general, it's pretty positive vibes. Everyone's like, there's no doom gloom. Everyone's really friendly. So I'd imagine if you're going to allow your kids on social media, that's probably a good place to start. And that's cool that you can pay her allowance or, you know, bonuses for accomplishing tasks on it. I never thought about utilizing like that. Another thing that Bitcoin just allows you to do. We have Bob up here and Wade. We have Shane in the audience. I just want to say good morning, gentlemen. And if you have anything you'd like to contribute, definitely chime in. Bob, I'd like to pick your brain a little bit, though. I think this falls in your wheelhouse. But if anyone else wants to chime in, please feel free to. We're going to kind of dig into what's going on in the UK with the gilts or their bonds rising so high. So it's now surpassed the 2022 all-time high where they had the gilt crisis and the Bank of England had to step in and kind of bail out all the pension funds. It looks like we lost Bob. So just Bob, when you get back, we'll go ahead and touch back on this. But bringing it back to stateside, we have the dollar that's rising. It's at like 109 right now. You have the 10 year and the 30 year approaching 5% pretty quick. And so I was looking and this looks like it's going to be an interesting setup for Trump and, Scott Bessette, the Treasury Secretary, to kind of tackle this and tame those rates and try and get the dollar to come back down. And with Trump's policy, with the tariffs and everything, I don't see how he's going to be able to get that dollar squashed. So if anybody up here on the panel can kind of talk on that and get their feedback, I think they have a really big uphill battle to try and make this economy start flowing smoothly. Eomar, Petro, nothing.
I am a terrible multitasker and was momentarily distracted, so I apologize.
No, you're good. You're good.
You know, I just got a breaking report from Glassnode that was catching my eye. That's talking about. Hang on, let me pull it up. Despite Bitcoin's impressive rally last year, MVRV levels above 3.2, typically associated with extreme euphoria, have not been reached yet. If BTC were to hit this level, it would correspond to a price tag of 132,000. Historically, BTC has spent only 5% of trading days above this threshold, reinforcing why it's viewed as a rare extreme euphoria zone. Will MVRV reach 3.2 this cycle? While momentum remains positive, and with MVRV still above 1 year mean average, currently 2.18, one of the key questions is whether this trend line will plateau in the coming weeks or whether making MVRV momentum an important metric, making MVRV momentum an important metric to monitor. So if you guys don't know what Glassnode is, they are a fantastic service, although expensive, of Bitcoin and a few other blockchain like data analytics, like really, really digging into exchange data, transaction data, you know, like blockchain data. I mean, really just super data analytical about the way that they do their stuff. And so it's always interesting when they're putting out material because they are very research focused.
That's interesting that you brought that up, Petro. Fidelity released a report this morning as well, and they were stating that the 2024 rally was due to the ETFs and it really increased the price, but what's going to be the catalyst for 25? And in there, they mentioned that they believe nation states are going to be the next driving force for the Bitcoin adoption and increasing the price. So I kind of is right there with that Glassnode getting it back up to that 135. I think this move in price, it looks, I don't know who's selling. Again, it's speculation. I would imagine a lot of this sell side is probably coming from people trying to cover their MicroStrategy shorts. I know that there's a huge option expiry coming on the 17th, and I saw some people smarter than me mention that there was going to be some selling coming on the Bitcoin side to kind of cover the strategy shorts. Because when I look, BlackRock bought 6,000 Bitcoin yesterday during that, during the dip. And then the day before they bought about 2,500. So again, it's not coming from the ETFs per se. It's coming from someone else. So it's going to be interesting to see how this unfolds. And I really think that Trump is going to do the SBR. Like we talked yesterday. And so it's really going to just make the price explode. But when I was looking at the ETFs and their inflows, hey, BitPetra, we still have a hot mic. When I was looking at the ETF flows, I noticed that Fidelity has officially passed up Grayscale on their ETF holdings. So Fidelity holds about 208,000 coin and Grayscale has right around 204,000. So. It's BlackRock and now Fidelity as the 1-2 for the ETF holdings, which is, again, it's not even a full year yet. And between those two, they've acquired, almost 700,000 Bitcoin. So just an insane amount of Bitcoin that's probably never going to see them get. And again, when nation states start buying and adopting this, it's nobody's prepared for what's going to happen. Hey, Bob, can you hear me?
Yeah, I was having connection issues earlier. Sorry, Coleman. But good morning. Good morning, everybody. I don't always like to, it sounds like I do this, but I don't always want to be like the contrarian. But I do think that this sets us up, you know, continues to set us up for these expectations, right? We all have these expectations. And so because markets are forward looking, you know, I would agree that, some of this has been front run, but not all of it. And, you know, if it doesn't happen on day one or two, I do think there's some risk for some downside or a reaction to that. So, as much as I agree with Fidelity that nation state adoption is going to drive the price in 2025, I just wonder how quickly it'll happen or how much we'll actually know the truth about it happening.
You know, what's funny. I just saw the path of most pain actually really has strong support at 43,000. Can you guys imagine that? 43,000. And that's not even like a ridiculous correction for a bull run. I mean, like, that's what, like 50%?
Yeah, I think, you know, price is one thing. I mean, that would be unprecedented, especially with how much we see, the hash rate going up. But,
What I'm telling you is that's volatility at that's what starts happening when you end up eating up your float, because both bears and bulls can actually move the market because there's so little float available that you start getting those massive moves up and down because you can actually affect the market with, you know, like 1,000 Bitcoin is a really, really, really high volume day these days. That was nothing a cycle ago.
So I would, like, again, if anything is possible with Bitcoin, where I would push back on that is that you have a floor bid, right now, currently with MicroStrategy. They had that 21-21 plan, over the course of 3 years. Again, they've blown through, I don't know the correct metrics off the top of my head, but it's anywhere from about $15 to $20 billion is what they've spent. So they still have about $20-25 billion left. That's a floor buy. If the price tanks, like you could imagine that MicroStrategy is going to deploy everything they can to scoop up those cheap sats, So I don't think.
But Saylor's already been through this. I think he is ready with a big stack of dry powder looking at, you know, 50,000 because he knows it's plausible, not probable, but plausible.
It could be, but then again, you have to look at the secondary effects with BlackRock. When you look at their metrics and how successful this ETF launch was, I think that they would try again. And again, you can't really manipulate Bitcoin, but I think they would pull up every stop they can to make sure that price doesn't have, from here, a 50% correction, because that would just be devastating for their shareholders and people that have bought into that, ETF. So again, I'm not saying that assuming it can't happen.
Assuming they're not getting a huge sell pressure, right? Like if they're getting a huge sell pressure, they have to sell Bitcoin.
You're absolutely right. But I think that, again, I don't know how BlackRock works. I have no idea how, I really don't know how it works internally, but I would just imagine that it would be very bad for them with all the showboats they've done with their ETF and the allocation. They recommend one to 2% on all bond portfolios to hold Bitcoin. They would just come with just like a lot of mud on their face if it took a 50% correction after they recommended that. So, I think there's just a lot of big players that would try to eliminate that from happening.
By the way,
Coleman, I'll also add that asset allocators allocate to assets for long periods of time. So they're not traders. They don't panic. On average, I mean, yes, there's some retail that have exposure, but by and large, like the data shows that this accumulation in the ETFs is by bigger players.
And I don't expect that 50,000, by the way, would be anything but a wick down. Like I would expect that, like you guys are saying, the floor is somewhere in the neighborhood of an, you know, 80,000-90,000 range. But I can, just because I've been in Bitcoin since, you know, 12-13, it would not surprise me at all that you have enough bear that are like whale bears that can actually move this market if we get real skinny on the float.
I think time will tell which way is going to go, but again, that's Max Payne. Again, outside some black swan event, I don't see that one playing out. Is coming to fruition. There was a really good podcast I listened to with British Hoddle, and he kind of laid it out with the MicroStrategy and BlackRock and how they're going to become kind of an inseparable pair of working with each other to keep the price of Bitcoin going up and always having buying pressure just to increase both companies' bottom line.
And I think to that point, you know, you have, BlackRock is becoming, and so is MicroStrategy, but you have these institutions who are basically salespeople for Bitcoin, which we've never really had before.
Stackers can dream.
Yeah, we can dream.
Pietro, I did just, throw a, $1,000, limit order at 50,000 for you, just so we have it out there in case it wicks down.
Dude, I'm telling you, so like the big lesson for me out of all the cycles, the three big lessons that I've learned are number one, just don't fuck it up. Sorry to use the French. But I mean, that's really number one. Do not mess this up. Just learn how to secure your keys and do it properly. Number two, $5 a day, and don't mess it up. Also super important. I mean, like, if you can afford to do that, and most people, most humans really can afford to do that, it can be life changing for you. And that's accessible to pretty much anybody in the United States. And most people in the developed world. And number three, man, always have some dry powder. It's some silly way down at the bottom order, because for tax purposes, I forced myself to buy the top, forced myself because my CPA has told me, make sure that when you see corrections that you sell and you buy right back. Don't, you know, gamble, but make sure you capture your losses. And I had really kind of puckered and did what she told me and had faith and put my limit order down at 94.9 and covered all my losses, booked them all in and got all my sats right back and then some. So if you have conviction, you know what you're doing, and you have patience, you can do really, really well for yourself, even with just $5 a day, and being cognizant that as you're buying stuff that's increasing in price, if they're going to let you play, and especially if you have Strike, which does the accounting for you in HIFO fashion, high in first out, then that is a tax loss harvesting strategy that is not available to securities traders.
So a couple of things I want to just make sure everyone understands. Anything we say on this show is not financial advice. Consult a financial planner to get more details. Everyone's situation is specific. The other thing I push back at is I'm always hesitant when someone says, you know, try and sell it and then buy it immediately back. Because again, Bitcoin loves to make everybody look like a fool. You think you understand what's going to happen, and then it wicks down or wicks up and you're just left in the dust. So it would be catastrophic for some people if, you know, we sold it right here and all of a sudden we had a 15K candle and it goes all the way up to 110.
I completely agree. And I should have caveated that with, at the end of last year, I did something that was in my mind pretty bold, which is I took my checking account for my business and I flipped it to Bitcoin only. So anytime I get paid in US dollars, I immediately switch over into Bitcoin. And I have been practicing about being good about dollar cost averaging, but also capturing my losses as I'm doing that. So that's part of why I'm doing that. My accountant did point out last year, and I mean, this is not advice for anybody else. This was specific for me. She noticed that I had gotten paid by one of my clients in Bitcoin. I sold the Bitcoin and I captured a loss. And she was like, that was interesting. Can you do that again? So at the end of usually towards the end of my tax year, I have a meeting with her. And she kind of says, okay, this is what I want you to do before the end of the year. And, I had a lot of different things that I could have done this year, like, heat pump and this and that, like all these tax things. And she was like, no, just book the loss, which blew my mind that a CPA is now telling me to book losses with Bitcoin. That just shows you where we're heading. But the idea is, guys, if you're I'm treating this like the dollar is a melting ice cube. And so I'm looking at this from the perspective of, anytime I can generate more sats from the sats that I currently have, that's a route that I'm taking for my business only. I still pay all of my bills and my main checking account is in US dollars. I'm still solvent. I'm paying all my bills. Please don't gamble with your money. But if you are at a point where you have preached for long enough about Bitcoin, you sometimes have to, you know, put your money where your mouth is.
I want to continue down that road a little bit. If you have a business, you really should look hard into adopting a Bitcoin standard. And I'm not saying accept only Bitcoin, But the way that it's going to allow you to free up capital and just grow at a rate that will rival any of your competitors is unprecedented. There is nobody, I can almost guarantee you, there's not going to be another company or small business in your area that's going to adopt a Bitcoin standard. You'll have a niche in the market and you'll be able to just grow your business at a rate that they can't keep up with. And they'll wonder how you're able to do it. I'll use myself as an example. I was listening to a podcast. I think it was, on what Bitcoin did, and it was the Fold CEO, came out and he said, if you're not adopting the Bitcoin standard and utilizing it to grow your company, you're not going to make it. And I figured out a way how I could sell future services in my business. And I took a percentage of those services sold and I put into Bitcoin for repairs I know I have to get done in the next couple of months. The money I put into there has more than doubled in less than 6 months. And it's allowing me to, again, grow my business. I don't have to use all of it. I can put it back away and just kind of watch it grow. So again, it gives you almost an unfair advantage when you're competing against other businesses. So not financial advice, but definitely you should look at adopting a Bitcoin standard if you have a business. If you don't have a small business or a side gig, like, always recommend doing that. You will never work harder for anyone than yourself. And there's some kind of motivation in that it just, and it unleashes just something inside of you that just makes you want to conquer the world. And again, I can't encourage everybody enough to start that. It doesn't have to be a large multi-million dollar business. Again, you can just, if you like to write, just write articles and then start a subscription platform for it. If you're good with art, do something with that. You know, if you're good with teaching people, create videos and then have some kind of like Patreon account or something where you can charge people for watching them. If you're good at entering, again, start something and just follow through with it. Be prepared to fail the first couple of times, but push through it. And just again, there's nothing better than being able to control your own schedule and to get your own time back. And that's why we have Bitcoin. But if you can do it with a business as well, again, it's amazing. Sorry for that long.
No, I think that's a great point. And, even if it doesn't succeed, it's still, an interesting concept. I've mentioned before, I had a Bitcoin mining LLC. And, we may have broke even due to like tax, like write-offs and stuff like that. But there's a lot of fun doing that. And then to your point, like if you have like something that you kind of view as a hobby, if you like start an LLC and like find some way to monetize it, even if unsuccessfully, then you at least get some like tax advantages. You can write off, you mentioned like writing articles, if you do that and you are, purchasing a lot of books and stuff, you could probably write those off. If you're, some sort of technology or something that you had to buy, if you can relate it to whatever business you started, you could probably write that off. You know, obviously again, talk to like a professional, accountant or whatever, whoever's doing your taxes. But it gives you a lot of advantages. And it's something you're going to do anyway, like, even if you like try to monetize it, like you mentioned like articles, like I use Substack to host. There's a bunch of other like hosting websites out there, that make it pretty streamlined and they're free or relatively free. Like really cheap. it just gives you that avenue. Like you can try to monetize it. And if not, it's something you were doing anyway. And, you might get some tax write-offs that will kind of help you, offset, whatever costs went into it. So. Definitely worth exploring. And to your point, it just kind of gives you like that sense of like, oh, well, I own this thing, and it gives you a little more motivation and drive. And maybe that first thing fails and you start something else and you're successful in that, or maybe it's your fifth thing that you start that you're actually successful in. But, it's definitely cool to get on that side of, just figuring out the ins and outs of starting and running a business, successful or not.
Yeah, and I forgot to mention, so thank you for bringing that up, Yomar, that just the tax incentives of having your own business are amazing. Again, you can take owner withdrawals. You get to skip out on some of the other taxes that you have to pay. Corporate retreats, you can go on a retreat to talk about your business 2 times a year. Again, it's important that everybody looks into it.
If you write about Bitcoin, you can go to, Bitcoin Alaska and probably write that off as a business expense because you're going to write about it, you know?
Yep. And it's not even a corporate retreat because it's work related. Again, there's so many ins and outs that a lot of people are just unfamiliar with. So highly encourage it. And if you do have a business, one of the best things you can do, again, this will be the last thing before we start switching gears, find a business coach. There's a lot of BBs, that are, coaches, mentors. Gabe, I'm going to call you out. I'm pretty sure this is what Gabe does, is he's a business coach and mentor. So again, reach out. If you're struggling, there is nothing that's going to accelerate your business and help you grow than a business coach. So feel free to reach out to us and we'll point you in the right direction. Really quick, I want to give a quick thank you to our partners, Black Sheep Ammo. Restock your ammo at blacksheepammo.com. Punch plate, stamp your seed phrase on a metal plate. We see what's going on in California right now. Again, it's horrible. I feel for everybody who's having to flee their homes with this fire. But it's extremely important that you stamp your seed phrase on a metal plate so when a fire does happen, it doesn't go up in flames. Check them out at punchplate.com. Paladin Tower Tactics, professional firearms and tactical training at paladintowertactics.com. And Solo Satoshi, open source Bitcoin mining. Use the code BTCVETS for 5% off your order. And if you pay with Bitcoin, as we all should, there's a potential for another 10% off your order. So total 15% off. Solosatoshi.com. Bitcoin Alaska, July 5th and 6th. This is a family-friendly conference. Bring your spouse, bring the kids. In Juneau, it's going to be an amazing time. Tickets and hotels are going quick, so please make sure you go out there, reserve your space, get your whale pass, go on the cruise to Tracy Arm Fjord, go see some whales, see sea lions, see the glaciers, bitcoinalaska.org. So going back to the California thing, it's absolutely crazy what's going on there. I don't know how that fire started. But there's around 30,000 people, over 10,000 households have been ordered to evacuate in the LA area. There's about 120,000 customers without power. And Terrence Michael, good friend of the show, made a very important post. And he says, during times, with the wildfires raging through LA, it's important to remind everyone to stamp your seed phrase on a metal plate and geographically separate your Bitcoin keys. And I did want to spend some time on this with the panel and just the importance of making sure that you're treating your Bitcoin like it's worth 100 times the amount it is right now. And if you don't have your key stamped on the metal plate, like you're really gambling with that. Like you definitely need to have it. You can break it up so you don't have your full 12 or 24 words on one plate if you want to. But I think Terrence is right where you need to make sure you're geographically distributing those keys in case something happens and you have to go or a family member has to go grab it, that they can go and get that for you. But Yomar, Bob, Bitpetro, and Wade, if you're up there, if you guys have any comments on that, I'd like to get your thoughts on geographically separating keys.
Yeah, I'll just add, I think, you know, obviously there's risk management with everything, right? So you have to look at one side as the probability of something happening. I think, putting it in metal is a best practice no matter what, in case something does happen. But, there's risks with geographically dispersing keys as well, right? So now you have multiple copies, you have multiple points of failure, where someone could find your keys or steal your keys. And so I think, you know, everybody has to kind of go through the thought exercise on this and try to figure out what's best for you. I'm not opposed to geographically dispersing your keys. I just think everybody needs to understand and think through the risks of each of these little decisions, because it's like, hey, I'm solving one problem by doing this, but now that creates a whole another attack vector. And so I think it's important for people, you know, do your own research, reach out to, you know, people who have experience with this. If you want to talk about your specific situation, there's lots of good resources out there, but I think it's most important, like as we have the discussion, that people understand, you know, there's different risk models to different strategies, and everyone should consider that for themselves. Kind of like what we were talking about with, strategies for like taxes and those things and businesses, like everybody's situation is different. So just thought I would, kick it off with that.
I got a question for you, Bob. Do you recommend multi-sig with geographically dispersing your keys, or do you think that just even complicates the problem even further?
Yeah, I mean, I guess, again, everybody's different. I think one day if you wake up and this is worth, a significant amount of money to you, then, you know, multi-sig might be a good option. And definitely if you're doing that, you'd want to disperse the keys, but make sure you know what you're doing. I think we've covered this before, but multi-sig really creates a whole nother, issue for people. If you don't understand how it works, you need to have the descriptor of that wallet stored with each key. So it's not just the key that you need to go and geographically disperse. It's also the descriptor of that wallet so that you could rebuild and recover that wallet and sign with, say, the two remaining keys in a 2 of 3 multi-sig. Don't want to get too technical and go too far down that path, but if you do a multi-sig, again, just make sure you've done the research, you know what you're doing, and there's plenty of good resources out there for multi-sig. I think for most people, though, just, you know, as I look at things and dealing with multiple different clients on all levels, from institutions to, you know, just my neighbor, I'd say for most people, if it's not a significant sum, multi-sig is overkill, and there's, again, many mistakes that people can make, where they lose their Bitcoin. So I think, what I would say is, you know, for most people, start out simple, understand what self-custody is in the first place. So, you know, a good 12 or 24 words, is a good start. Obviously, the hardware wallets are a best practice from the standpoint of not exposing your keys to internet-connected devices. And, you know, for some people, they might employ a strategy of adding a passphrase to those 12 or 24 words. And, again, there's drawbacks with that as well, because if you lose your passphrase or forget it, think of it as a 13th or 25th word, depending on your setup. You know, there's risks to that as well. But it also gives you the ability to store, you know, if you don't have a good memory or you don't want to commit to memorizing your 12 or 24 words, you can have that stamped in metal. And then just remember the 25th or 13th word. And you can also geographically disperse your 12 or 24 words from your passphrase. If you want to keep a metal backup of that somewhere else, that could be a good way to do it too. So there's all kinds of ways to, you know, slice and dice this. I don't want to, kind of cop out and say, hey, there's no, right solution for you and you need to go do your own research, but really you do need to go do your own research and think through these things and understand the value, and as Coleman always talks about, the future value of what this might be worth, and then plan accordingly.
Thank you, Bob. Again, you don't want to make it so complicated where you lock yourself out in an emergency. But you want to make it complicated enough where if someone comes in it's and gets it, it's not just a freebie for them. It's not just a donation to the criminal with the $5, or I guess inflation adjusted, the $15 wrench attack. But Beth Petra, I see your hand up, sir.
Yeah, I want to add a little bit of a different spin on multi-sig. I think that once you are thinking about estate planning, multi-sig becomes something that's important, because at the end of the day, especially if for a lot of us, our significant others and kids maybe aren't fully orange-pilled, then asking them to pick up the technical load of private public key pair is a pretty big fear lift. It's not a big intellectual lift, but from a fear perspective, it's pretty large, especially if the sums are, let's say, north of at today's prices, half a Bitcoin. And two cycles ago, you know, when I first started looking at multisig, half a Bitcoin seemed like not really a lot of money. So the first thing that I would say is, if you are okay with privacy not being the main focus, it seems to me that the best trade-off is definitely a shared custody model, the likes of Unchained or somebody like that. You could Uncle Jim this by you being the party that does the Unchained part and teaching your family members how to hold their own keys and just, you know, forming your own quorums that way. But at the end of the day, that still is the same trade-off that you're making from a trust perspective and also from a privacy perspective. And so I would say that's not something to be taken lightly, because at the end of the day, my wife does not have to know shit about Bitcoin and can completely despise Bitcoin. I can get hit by a bus tomorrow and all she has to do is take one of the keys that we have in the house somewhere and take it to Unchained or call Unchained, and she can recover those funds. That's not a trivial thing. That's especially not a trivial thing when you're talking about I died and my keys were left in a will with a map to where somebody needs to dig. And you think that that's funny, but the reality is like, if you're not super advanced, probably the safest thing that you can do to geographically separate keys is to literally put three keys in three different holes in your yard, because at the end of the day, your house is going to burn down, but the ground is not. And look, you can be super pragmatic. We're all talking about, writing keys on metal. But the fact is that if you're intelligent enough to figure out different modes of securing your keys, a gun safe, a Ziploc bag, and a note card, and then a set of washers, and then a piece of paper inside of a bank safe deposit box. These are all very valid ways to store something that could be either a passphrase or a seed. Whether you're sharding to separate out your keys, or whether you're doing a roll your own crypto, which I highly, 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 highly don't recommend. Matter of fact, just don't ever roll your own crypto. Forget about that. Like, this is part of why I don't really like the passphrase idea. I feel like rolling a passphrase is rolling your own crypto, because you have to understand how much entropy your passphrase needs before it's crackable. And so unless it's a really long, like if it just, cryptography 101, guys, the math problem is only as difficult as the input. So if you decide that your passphrase is voodoo, you just basically handed somebody your keys, because voodoo is about as easy a crack as you can get. You've got, you know, four digits out of six that are the same damn thing. So just be super aware that mathematical problems have weaknesses, and that you need to be super cognizant that those entropy weaknesses aren't triggered by your ease or convenience to access your keys. The point is, should be that you're ossifying your access, not that you're making it easy. So as you progress, you want this to get harder, not easier, more steps to get to your Bitcoin. But at the same time, not so many steps that
you potentially cannot pass on your steps or worse, mess them up.
Keep it simple. Kiss. Go ahead, Eomer.
I was just going to say, like, real quick, just, you know, when you're deciding what to do, the big thing is just to get it off exchanges. And then from there, really assess your situation. You know, if you travel a lot, it probably makes sense. You know, imagine if you travel a lot for work and you're away for business and then you're LA's on fire. You can't get home, right? If your keys are there, you're in bad shape. But if you had them geographically distributed, then, you know, you can recover that. You know, so it really is, you know, like we say a lot, like you got to do some research and pick a solution that fits your life and lifestyle. That's basically, I just wanted to mention that. The big thing is just get it off exchanges. And then you can start diving deep into the fine tuning your personal security there.
And the thing I'll add to that as well is, again, you should always stamp your keys. I really do believe that you should do that. And how you, where you put them, how you save them is completely up to you and your comfort level. But I think we put too much of an emphasis on a scare tactic almost, that memorizing the 12 or 24 words is tough. Like that, it's one of my biggest frustration points when it comes to Bitcoiners. It's really not hard to memorize those 12 or 24 words. If you know you can't memorize 24, a seed phrase with 12 words is still extremely secure. Memorize 12 words. I know everybody can do it. Start just saying them in your head every day and just repeat it. And then just keep doing it every single day. And eventually you're going to have it memorized. Like if you can memorize your family's names, your coworkers' names, there is no reason why you can't memorize your 12-word seed phrase. So again, if you only have your seed phrase in one spot, again, you should be able to memorize those words and you can go ahead and back up your wallet without having the physical copy of it. So that's all I'll say on that. So we're getting to the top of the hour and I have an appointment, so I have to have a hard stop at 10 o'clock. Does anybody else want to cover anything today, touch on anything that we might have missed, go back and circle back on anything?
I know you're going to talk about the Greenland stuff, and I'll just share a post to the Nest, at the top, but I really just see this as a way for us to shift our, the way we think of our role in the geopolitical landscape. You know, we've talked previously about, the ending of our global hegemony and like turning towards like a regional one. And, you know, if you were to make a regional map of where the United States is going to have power and influence, it's probably all the stuff that Trump is talking about, right? So I see this really as like, at first I thought it was just nonsense, but like as I think about it, I think this is how they are shifting the narrative from, hey, look what's going on in the Middle East, towards, you know, that's not our problem. We're going to look over here instead. So I think that might be what's going on here. It's like a nice, easy America is great way of saying, you know, this is our role now. It's diminished, but you know, if we pitch it as a win, it's easier for people to digest.
But why bring it up now? Like what I don't get, is it the art of the deal? What's he trying to get out of the situation? Why are we putting so much emphasis on this, I guess?
Okay. Well, to tackle the two different sides you've got, I've been waiting for the whole hour for you to bring this up. So, there's more in Panama than just the aspect of, trade. There's also a UN headquarters for, that pushes mass migration to the US, and with his immigration push, I have a feeling that he wants to take control of the easy corridor to shut down illegal immigration through. So I think that's part of Panama, as well as the geopolitical aspect of, the geographical aspect of trade, in getting, any freighters from the Atlantic to the Pacific is pretty huge. So when you have an enemy state taking control of that corridor, that's huge for the U.S. The other one, Greenland, living in Alaska, and you look at Seward's day, Seward's folly, you know, to acquire the country has, I think, under 100,000 people. It's a pretty small country, population wise, but geographically, it's between Canada and, you know, Europe, mostly closer to Canada. So location wise, it is closer to North America. And as he pushes Canada, and the amount of resources that exist in Greenland that are easy access because you're not having to go through, forest wooded area. It's just raw land. Of course, most of it's, you know, there's a lot of fjords and there's a lot of ice, but the amount of titanium in Greenland is massive as well that can be accessed. So I don't see these as far-fetched. I think the media has pushed them as far-fetched, but when it comes to stopping mass migration from Venezuela, Colombia, anywhere in South America, Panama is huge. And when it comes to resources, that have been unextracted, Greenland's massive.
I'm going to back up the Greenland resource, comment because I think from a natural gas and, potentially heavy oil, I mean, we don't know. There's been very little exploration out there. But one of the last places that there could be heavy oil, which just so happens to be the oil that we make all of the petrochemicals out of, and also the heavy oil that is where that our refineries are specifically tuned to be, you know, refining, then it would make a lot of sense that if we're not going to pick up Venezuela, that we pick up Greenland.
Strategically, it's pretty close to, you know, Russia, which is the big bad boogeyman too. So there could be that aspect of it as well. You know, if there's missiles flying over the North Pole or around it, it could be a good spot to have some things.
We have a military base in Greenland. That base, we, tried to put missile silos underneath the ice fields, and that doesn't work out well, but that doesn't mean that as more of the land is exposed that it doesn't come to fruition where we do utilize it for easy access for ICBMs to other parts of the world.
All right, guys.
Yeah, and just to answer Coleman's thing real quick, you know, if everything shifts to a Bitcoin standard, we won't be able to maintain our global empire. So that would be my answer, Coleman, to as why now are they doing it?
Oh, that's perfect. We'll have to touch on this tomorrow. I got to take off though, so I got to end the show here. I do want to thank everybody for tuning in. It was an absolute pleasure again for everyone joining, talking to everybody. Again, I appreciate everyone. Let me just rant and express my opinions and y'all just pay attention for the whole hour. So I really do appreciate that. Again, tune in tomorrow, 10 a.m. Eastern time. We'll be doing this. We'll follow back up with this because I missed a lot of the conversation. But again, thank you for everyone who joined, Yomar, DePetro, Bob, Wade, and everybody in the audience. And I will see you all tomorrow. Go out there, crush it today. But don't shitcoin. It's like putting coins in your pillow and getting back old teeth.